Today on this bonus edition of the Callahan Podcast, we're joined by Tim Murtaugh. Tim Murtaugh is the Director of Communications for the Trump campaign, which is in full swing already, 6 months away from the election. They're plotting and planning their strategy and ready to go at hiding Joe Biden. He's also the grandson, I just learned, of Danny Murtaugh, a former Pittsburgh Pirates manager, two-time World Series champ. And we'll talk to Tim about growing up in a big league clubhouse and hanging out with Donald J. Trump. And of course, Kaylee McEnany. We'll ask about Kaylee McEnany too. Today's bonus podcast, Tim Murtaugh.
This is the Jerry Callahan Podcast.
Joining us now is Tim Murtaugh, Director of Communications for the Trump campaign, Trump 2020 campaign. That sounds to me, Tim, like a big job, like 24/7. Or are you like Congress? Are you taking 4 months off right now? Are you on a long vacation?
No, we are not like Congress. We actually work for a living here on the Trump campaign. It's a pretty busy job. Sure, it's 24 hours a day. You know, I keep late hours and start early in the morning. I have two very small little boys, and so they get me up early anyway. And it doesn't matter how early I get up. I'm always greeted by a whole bunch of emails and text messages that happened overnight. And we've been running pretty much full speed on the campaign for well over, I myself, for over a year now, but the campaign never really went dark. You know, the president filed for his reelection the morning of Inauguration Day, and so that's unprecedented, and he never turned the lights off. And so the campaign has been going nonstop really for the last 3.5 years, and we're full speed, and we will peak right at Election Day, and we will be ready for giving the president 4 more years.
All right. It's 6 months away. We know the president is a busy man. We see him every day dealing with the virus, dealing with everything. I mean, he obviously has his hands full. How hands-on is he with you guys with the campaign, with the 2020 campaign?
Well, the president has empowered Brad Parscale, our campaign manager, to run the campaign day to day. But he stays very, very much involved. He gets regular briefings every week. He's on the phone with Brad, I think, nearly every day. He personally approves the advertising, and he wants to know what's going on. Brad talks to him all the time. We have teams going in and giving him campaign briefings from time to time, generally weekly those briefings are. And so he's very much in tune with what's going on. He's got a very important, very demanding day job, of course, being president of the United States, particularly as it relates to the coronavirus and the crisis that the nation is facing. But he's not on the campaign trail right now. Of course, we haven't done any of those large rallies that people are so used to for the last 3 months or so. And so he's been focused really on the task at hand for the country. But Brad keeps him informed as to what we're doing on the campaign.
I know you get this question a lot. I do. I get it a lot. You know, will we see, or when will we see a normal campaign with rallies and, more importantly, with debates? Do you expect that Trump v. Biden, will be center stage, like a good old-fashioned debate, and will there be three of them? And if so, when will they be? Because I think my theory is these are going to replace sports. You know, we kind of lost sports. You know, even the baseball season won't be the same, and people will all tune in. They will be I don't know about Super Bowl numbers, but you're going to get like AFC championship numbers for Trump Biden if it's a good old-fashioned debate.
Yeah, we anticipate that there will be debates. When they'll occur and what form they take and what kind of audience there is, it's anybody's guess. But there will be negotiations that go back and forth. But we do anticipate that there will be debates. The president looks forward to it. And I don't think that the prospects of Joe Biden being able to go head to head with Donald Trump on stage one on one are very good for Joe Biden. I mean, if you look at the guy, he can't even barely master a webcast from his own basement. Every time he goes out there and tries to do one of these productions, it's a complete and utter technological disaster. I mean, he's had 3 months now and still can't get the webcasting down. And I don't know how he can possibly claim to be able to run the country in a crisis situation when he can't even harness a staff together to get him to do a flawless webcast. That's kind of staggering. So there will be debates and that's up to others to negotiate the time and place and all that. But we anticipate that there will be. As far as rallies go, you know, the president wants to get back out there as soon as it is safe. You know, rallies are really the best way that he connects with large groups of the American people. There's so much energy in these rallies, and I think that there's a lot of pent-up enthusiasm for a Trump rally. And when we finally do get back out there, and we anticipate that we will, when we finally get back out there, I mean, that first rally is just going to be lit. It's going to be so great. People are dying for it, you know.
Well, and it's one thing that he can do that generally his opponents can't do, whether it was in the primary or in the general election. I think Biden has one advantage, though, because a lot of the states now have rules that you can't have gatherings over 50 people. So Biden can still have rallies.
He can still have his.
You know, you guys can't. So that's kind of a disadvantage. I was wondering, though, as you sit back as a campaign guy, do you think it helps or hurts Biden that he's been trapped in the basement? Because it's a very controlled thing. He's not getting peppered with questions. There's really no chance that anything, I mean, he's not doing it well, but everything is controlled by his people. And so do you think they want to keep him in the basement, or do you think they want to get him outside and have him, you know, face the public?
No, I think they want to keep him in the basement. There's no question of that. I mean,
been a little rough.
What's that?
You know, it's been a little rough.
It's been really rough for him, but I mean, it's even rougher. Imagine, just remember what it was like for him when he was out on the campaign trail. I mean, people call these things that Joe Biden does, they call them gaffes, but I think that's a little bit too complimentary and gives him a little too much credit for just making mistakes. Look, the guy was a terrible candidate for president the first two times he ran for president. He's even worse now. And I think the way the president likes to say it, I know this is a sort of a quasi sports show you got here. Joe Biden has lost his fastball. Yes. And you know what happens to an old pitcher who doesn't have the pop on his fastball anymore? He doesn't last too long in the game. And so they're keeping Biden in the bullpen for as long as they possibly can. And you even see it now when he's doing live TV interviews from his basement, where you've got, you know, the split screen effect because everything's being done remotely now. You can hear his handlers interrupting from off camera saying, okay, that's it. We're out of time. I mean, it's one thing to try to call the end of a press conference for a staffer to say, okay, hey, this is the last question. It's another thing entirely for someone to interrupt a live television interview to say, okay, that's it, we're done here. So they're really trying to protect the guy, because every time he opens his mouth, he makes huge mistakes. And they're not gaffes. They are huge mistakes that he makes. He gets caught lying about his own record, lying about the president's record, misremembering things, claiming to have been places and done things that he never did or went to. And so, yeah, they want to keep him down there as long as possible.
And the worst gaffe I've seen in years, I think, is probably telling black people that they're not black if they don't support him. I mean, were you rooting for him in the primary? And did you think he was going to come out of it? Because I did. I mean, I think people, Democrats right now, are looking back and saying, tell me again what was wrong with Buttigieg or Obama. I mean, why did we pick this guy when they just see every day another gaffe? And they know, by the way, it's not going to get better. I don't know about you, but I've had experience with people with cognitive decline, and it doesn't improve. And he's not going to suddenly become sharper in September or October, or certainly, you know, under the pressure of a debate. I think it's going to get worse for him and better for you.
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely getting worse. And, you know, he's not going to suddenly wake up one day and have the political skills of Bill Clinton, right, on the Democrat side, who was, you know, renowned as a great politician and really smooth and everything. He's not going to suddenly become that. But yeah, that you mentioned that epic thing that he said to Charlemagne the God on that morning radio show, were saying that if you're black and if you're having a hard time trying to decide whether you're for Trump or for Biden, then you ain't black. That's what he said. And, you know, I would note that it was one of the interviews where his staff tried to cut him off about a minute before then. And then he went on to say that. So that's one case where maybe he should have let his staff actually cut him off. I mean, it just shows the arrogance and the entitlement that Joe Biden feels. I mean, here's a guy, he really thinks that he is owed the job of president, and that, and anyone who questions him, he gets really angry. And the hubris of a 77-year-old white man telling black voters how they should think and act and vote, and as an expectation of his, is really remarkable. And, you know, it may be out of the news cycle right now, because I guess that happened about a week ago. And so it's not in the daily headlines anymore. But believe me, we remember it at the Trump campaign. And I know that an awful lot of Black Americans remember what he said, and will bear that in mind as we head toward Election Day.
Well, you are. I think the campaign put together that video with a bunch of Black supporters, and it was brilliant. It was really powerful. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, you guys need, what, 15, 16% of the Black vote, maybe 17 to win this, or to win it easily, perhaps. Is that the number you're looking at? Because it seems to me like it's very doable. I mean, Mitt Romney got 5%. He was awful, a terrible candidate. I mean, you guys need, and I mean, I think you could realistically get a lot more of the Black vote, which would make it tough for Biden to win, no?
Yeah, I think sure. And I think the president is making great inroads with Black voters. And all you have to do is look at the president's record. I mean, we know, everyone knows that this economy was riding high, and it was the best economy that anyone had ever seen before it got artificially interrupted by the coronavirus. This is a global pandemic that is affecting every country on earth. And I think everyone understands that. And they also know where the economy was before that happened. And they also see President Trump as the only candidate with a record who can demonstrate, look, I did it once and I'll do it a second time. And that is true for Black Americans as well. It was unprecedented low unemployment for Black Americans, the unprecedented low poverty rate for Black Americans, people being given opportunities, wages were rising, and people were finding good jobs or getting a better job than the one that they already had. He had dedicated more money to historically Black colleges and universities than any president before him. And also his dedication to criminal justice reform is something that no other president had ever really done. Remember, during the Super Bowl, I know that seems like probably 10 years ago now, but it was only really just a few months ago. During the Super Bowl, we spent $10 million for a couple of ads. And one of the ads highlighted the president's work on criminal justice reform and a woman named Alice Johnson, whose sentence he commuted. She was in jail for a first-time nonviolent drug offense. And the president reached out and helped her. So what he's doing is restoring people with their families, reuniting families, restoring communities, giving people a second chance at life. That's the real Trump record as it affects Black Americans in their everyday lives. And if you contrast that with Joe Biden and what he said to, you know, you ain't Black if you're not going to vote for him. And also his record, you know, he has embraced the racist Democrat senators from the past and given them praise. He claimed that he voted in the civil rights marches of the 19, or rather marched in the civil rights marches of the 1960s when he did no such thing and had to later say, well, I didn't actually march. And his staff now says, oh, he was marching for the ideas in the U.S. Senate. I mean, come on. The guy is a fabulist. He makes up crazy things. And so we know that the president's he got about 8% of the Black vote in 2016 when he won the first time. And we know that he is far, far exceeding that now. We would never really put a number on what we think the president needs as far as the Black vote goes. And we're realistic about it. But we know that there's a lot to like on the president's record if Black voters are looking for someone who actually has done something that makes a difference in their communities.
Your job changed a lot when the pandemic hit beginning of March. Then we had the shutdown. Do you feel like that there are blue state governors out there, including the governor of the state I'm in right now, Massachusetts, who want this lockdown to last as long as possible, maybe even to November 3rd? Who knows? Do you think that it is attractive to them because they know it is keeping, you know, the Trump economy from rebounding? And if this economy bounces back and he says it's going to take off like a rocket, well, if it does, you know, these Biden's in trouble and they know it. Do you think that's the motivation between to some of these blue state governors keeping their states shut down?
I think there's no question of that. I think that's definitely at least part of their calculus. These are political animals. They're elected officials. Let's remember that. And of course, they want to see things work out in favor of their candidate for president. And they also know there was a story in Politico this week. One of President Obama's economic advisors, who's now a professor at Harvard, said that Democrats that he's talked to, they are terrified that the economy is going to take off like a rocket ship. And he, as an economist, he personally predicts that the third quarter and the fourth quarter, we're going to see explosive economic growth in this country that is unprecedented. The biggest burst of economic growth in the history of this country. And he says that this is how it was phrased in Politico. That's the doomsday scenario for Democrats. So imagine that. Imagine that if you're a Democrat here, where you think that the economy rounding back into shape is bad news for you. Good news for Americans is bad news for Democrats. What a sad, pathetic position to be in. So I think there's no question that if Democrat governors are seen as being a little bit slow and foot dragging and getting the economy back open again in their states, it is fair to wonder, is there any motivation behind that? Because you see other governors, Florida was under a lot of pressure from the COVID-19 infections, and they approached it about as differently as you possibly can as compared to, say, New York and Governor Cuomo. Right. And the media was all over Governor DeSantis in Florida. He was enemy number one. He was killing people in his own state. This is what the media said. Meanwhile, they were praising and canonizing Governor Cuomo. And meanwhile, Florida is far and ahead away, better than New York State's record has been. And so I think you just see the difference in the way the media treats these things and the way the Democrat governors have handled them and the way the optimistic Republican governors have handled them.
I would say, if you want to see the best example I've ever seen, I would say of media bias, look at the treatment of DeSantis versus Cuomo and the record. You know, look at reality, the objective record of the two of them versus the treatment from the media. And there's some people who have put together, you know, some videos, some montages, and it's incredible. What DeSantis did everything right, Cuomo did everything wrong, including the most egregious mismanagement ever when he put coronavirus positive patients in nursing homes.
Yeah.
Now he's still got a 68%, not 70% approval rating. I mean, these are people who are letting the media's depiction of the guy affect them. It has to be, because if you look at it objectively, I mean, Cuomo, if you're a Republican, I think he'd have been thrown out of office already, if not arrested. He's been so negligent.
It shows you the power of the media, because you're right. Cuomo ordered nursing homes to take the COVID-19 patients. And of course, the vast, vast number of their deaths have now since occurred in those nursing homes. But it's not just there in New York. Governor Wolf in Pennsylvania did the same thing. And in fact, his health secretary in Pennsylvania, Governor Wolf's health secretary, who was the one overseeing all of the nursing homes and retirement centers being forced to take the COVID positive patients, she pulled her own mother out of a nursing home at the same time she was forcing other people's parents to live with infected patients there at the same time. The governor of Michigan as well is also one who forced the retirement homes and nursing facilities to take these. And so, I don't understand. If it had been a Republican governor who did such things, I mean, there would be calls for their heads.
It would be the scandalous sanctuary. If Cuomo, Republican, or Whitmer, because, you know, the 20-year-old punk that beat up the 75-year-old guy in the nursing home was placed there. He was put there. They were roommates. I mean, that would be such a big scandal if she weren't a Democrat. But, hey, that's, the benefit of, being a friend of the media.
And yeah.
The health director in Philly, not only in Pennsylvania, not only did she take her mother out, but she claimed her 95-year-old mother made that choice herself to leave the comfort of her nursing home and move to a hotel.
Right. I mean, she said her mother has the capability to make her own decisions. But I guess the parents of other Pennsylvanians don't have that capability. I guess you have to take her at their word. And then, in Michigan, with the governor's husband up there at their vacation home, not only did she tell other Michiganders that they couldn't go to their vacation homes and travel during the lockdown, but she also warned against all kinds of different social distancing guidelines and all that stuff. Yet her husband went up to their vacation home and tried to get their boat put in the water prior to Memorial Day. I mean, it's just astounding. And the lack of curiosity by the media over all these things. Just look at the Cuomo brothers. You've got one Cuomo brother who's a CNN host interviewing the other Cuomo brother, who's the governor of New York, and they're having a good old time. Oh, mom likes you best. Oh, I'm the good looking one. I'm the smart one. Imagine the media's reaction if President Trump had a nationally televised interview conducted by Donald Trump Jr. and they were goofing around and having a good time during this crisis like that. How do you think that would go over?
While people are dying in nursing homes, grandparents and parents of people, viewers, are dying because of the negligence of the incompetence of one of those two, and they're giggling and bringing out props. It's incredible, the double standard. But, You know what? I think over time people will learn. I hope people will learn the truth, and Cuomo will go down as the scoundrel that he is, because it's just so egregious. It's just so disgusting what he's done. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Flagship Wealth. We're living in crazy economic times, job changes, job losses. You may have a 401k out there that's not being actively managed. Well, Flagship Wealth has a free report called Managing Your Money in Retirement. Dave, give our listeners some idea about what's inside the guide.
Jerry, in these crazy economic times, it's important to take control of your retirement. Now, is this booklet the end-all, be-all for retirement planning? The answer is no, but it's a start. And I think one of the major pieces in this piece, if you will, is concerning your inventory. And a number of your listeners out there right now have left their 401ks, their 403bs at former employers and have no idea how they're invested, if they're in cash, if they're ultra-aggressive, who the beneficiaries are. More importantly, can they get access to it that they could within an IRA account? So again, the bottom line is they get their hands on the book, take control of your retirement now. Now is not the market to let things go unguided.
Get the free report by going to flagshipwealth.com/retirement or click the link in our show notes. That's flagshipwealth.com/retirement to learn more and get a copy of the free guide, Manage Your Money in Retirement. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIPC. That brings me to the best move Donald Trump has made since, I don't know, the best idea he's had since the wall. And that would be the wonderful, the lovely Kayleigh McEnany. Was that your idea? Because
No, I would love to take credit for that, but no, that was not my idea. Kayleigh, she was the national press secretary on the campaign, and I worked with her every single day for over a year. And we were sorry to lose her. There's no question of that. But, you know, if she's going to go anywhere, it might as well be to the White House. We also are aware that rule number one on the Trump campaign or anywhere in Trump world is if the boss calls, you answer, right? So she got called up to the White House, and we couldn't be happier for her. She's just a bulldog, and nobody outworks Kayleigh. Nobody out-prepares Kayleigh. And I pity the reporters who are there in the briefing room with her and trying to engage in a battle of wits with Kayleigh, because she really takes no prisoners, and she's just a bulldog.
And she's 32. So I mean, she'll be doing this for, you know, 40 more years. I got bad news for Jim Acosta. You know,
In the 40th year of the Trump administration, right? She'll still be up there doing it.
And maybe she'll be in the White House, but and the way she, it's one thing to fight with them and call them out on their hypocrisy, but the way she does it so methodically and just turns page of her little notebook and says, I want to get to this, and goes with the slide presentations. I mean, that, I got to say, the people that support Trump, the people that were tired of the media bias, everything, the deep state, tired of all that. They love what Kayleigh McEnany does more than anything, because Trump does it too, is just throw it right back in their faces. That brings them out of their seats and just kind of cheering, because it's been forever since we've had someone fight back. I mean, most people like me, we like, you know, George Bush. Hell, I used to like Mitt Romney. I supported Mitt Romney, but we never really got a fighter. We've never really had a fighter, and Trump's a fighter, and so is she. And it's just,
and that's what the president wants to see. You know, he absolutely is a fighter, and he wants to win every encounter. And that's what he engenders in the people that work for him and who are around him. And I love to see the reaction on Twitter to Kayleigh and her daily briefings and the different things that she has said and done during these briefings, because, you know, on the right side of Twitter, everyone is cheering her on, like you were just saying, and she's doing really, really doing just a great job. And then on the left, on lefty Twitter, you see, naturally, the first thing that they go to, she's a young, as you pointed out, young, attractive, blonde woman. And the natural first thing that the tolerant left does is insult her intelligence, that she's a dummy. Oh, you dimwitted Kayleigh. Well, I don't think that they're turning out too many dummies from Oxford and Harvard Law School. And so Kayleigh goes in there, and it really, in any battle of wits, she has the opponent completely and totally outgunned. And I think they know that. And she really is doing a great job. I couldn't be proud of her. We were sorry to lose her, but she's doing a great job for the president. It's all one big team, you know, as far as we're concerned.
I was going to say, if your goal is to get him reelected, I think she's still doing a fine job for the campaign. Yeah. And the beauty, she doesn't get flustered. At least I haven't seen her. Maybe you've seen her get flustered, which to me is a flaw with the president. Now, I'm a supporter. I'll continue to support him, God knows, against Biden. But I got to be honest with you, Tim. I don't like the tweets. Not all. I mean, some tweets I do, some I don't. I heard you talk about this with Dana Perino. I cringe when he's tweeting about Joe Scarborough's intern in the middle of all this. There's so much that you can look to, be proud of, build on, and I don't know why you have to sink to that level. You must feel that way. You must feel like sometimes when the president's tweeting, you just have to cringe and say, can we just skip that?
Well, look, the president is his own guy, and I think he got where he is in life and in the Oval Office by just being who he is. He's always true to himself, and I don't think that there are any Americans who are not aware that Donald Trump is a guy who says what's on his mind. And I think that that is what drew so many Americans to him in the first place. We hear it still over and over again with people saying, you know, I love the guy. He says, oftentimes, he says exactly what I'm thinking in my own head. So, you know, Donald Trump is Donald Trump. And I think by now he's a known quantity for Americans. And I think that's priced in as people consider his reelection. And I think if you look at the totality of his record and everything that he has done, building up the economy and the ability to do it again, and the leadership that he has shown throughout the coronavirus crisis for every American, and is the really the record of entirety of putting America first and building up American status across the world again, that argues so strongly for his reelection. And I think everyone understands that the way that he uses Twitter, it's a way that he connects, and he often says what is really in the front of his mind. And that's just who President Trump is.
And there's nobody else involved. I think we can all agree on that point. Now, I remember early on, people used to think that, you know, there was a team involved or advisors when it came to tweeting, the way there is with Biden, I'm sure.
I don't think Joe Biden has written a tweet in his entire life.
But the president is on it, correct?
We're always so tempted to reply to his tweets and say, you didn't write this. You know, hello, Joe Biden staffer, whoever wrote this tweet. The president is his own best communicator. And you know, you can just look through his Twitter feed. Those are really his thoughts and really his tweets. There's no question.
But he's got some good surrogates. Donald Jr. is a good tweeter, and he's a good counterpuncher like his father, but he doesn't go off the rails like Dad sometimes does.
Don's pretty spicy sometimes. Don Jr. Yeah. Don Jr. is pretty spicy sometimes. But look, I mean, I think the whole thing. This is the president has really broken the mold. There's never been a president like him before he got elected, and I dare say there won't be one like him whenever his time in the Oval Office comes to an end. And so that's who Donald Trump is. And I don't think it's a mystery to anybody in this country. And I think that it is in large part why so many millions of Americans were drawn to him in the first place. When really, you know, remember in the early going of the Republican primaries in 2015, no one gave him a chance. No one ever gave him a chance. And then he became the nominee and still no one ever gave him a chance. There's no way he can beat Hillary Clinton. You know, the 538 and all those other analytical websites, 98% chance that Hillary Clinton wins. And then the parade of tears on MSNBC on election night was just amazing. So
it's going to be worse this time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
They've thrown everything at him. You know, obviously you got 3 years of Russian collusion and you got Ukraine and you got everything else. And I know he's trailing in some of the polls, but I assume at this point, you guys just say polls mean nothing.
The polls as they relate to Donald Trump have never meant anything. Public polls have always been wrong about Donald Trump. If we elected presidents by polls, then Hillary Clinton would be in the Oval Office right now. So, no, public polls don't mean anything. They routinely use the wrong models. They don't look at what happened in 2016. They oversampled Democrats. They don't screen for likely voters. They either sample random adults, essentially dialing random phone numbers in the phone book. They don't screen for likely voters. At best, they often use just registered voters, which is always hampers the Republican on the ballot. And we know that there are hidden Trump voters, people who don't tell pollsters the truth. The only polls that we trust are the ones that we see internally because we know the methodology and we spend a lot of money on polls. Now, before anybody reacts and say, well, of course, your polls tell you the good news. Listen, we don't spend millions of dollars on polls to be lied to, right? We want to know what the truth is and what's actually happening out in the country. And our polls tell us that President Trump is in solid shape in all of these states that we look at. We're focused on 17 key states. You know, there are some states that you basically know that the Democrat's going to win, and right. other states that you basically know are Republican states. There are 17 states there that are really going to decide this election, and those are the ones we focus on poll-wise, and we know that the president is in good, solid position in those states. And remember, we only just now, very recently, have learned that Joe Biden is going to be our opponent. And so we have only just now begun to define Joe Biden. In our polling and in public polling, we know that a lot of Americans, most Americans, know of Joe Biden, but not very many people know very much about Joe Biden. And that's our job, is to educate people as to what Joe Biden's record is, what he stands for, and what he's proposing. And once we inform Americans of those facts, it's not even really very close.
And I think I'm going to guess that you're going to inform America about Hunter Biden as well, correct?
Our old friend Hunter. He may come up in conversation once or twice, yes.
I was going to say, I would expect in the first minute of the first debate, I would expect...
That could be. He's already been mentioned and featured in some paid television advertising that we've done. And that's a big problem that Joe Biden's got. And it's specifically as it relates to China. You know, these days, people are very concerned about China and China's role in the world and the fact that they lied to the world about what happened in Wuhan at the beginning of the outbreak. And then they were working in cahoots with the World Health Organization to keep the rest of the world in the dark and really put everybody else behind the curve and behind schedule on fighting this thing. And at the beginnings of the outbreak, that's the very most important time, of course. And China lied to everybody at the same time that they were buying up millions and millions and millions of pieces of equipment, gloves and masks, personal protection equipment and all that, because they knew it was coming and they didn't tell anybody else about it. We see this now. We know that that's what they did. But Joe Biden has a long history of coddling China, making excuses for China, and putting China really ahead of the United States' interests. He argued very forcefully and was a big champion of their admittance to the World Trade Organization, and that cost the United States 60,000 factories. And over the course of time, millions of American jobs have been outsourced to China and to other countries as a result of Joe Biden. He was opposed to the president standing up to them for their illegal and bad trade actions. He was opposed to the president pinpointing China as the origin of the virus. He criticized the president's decision to shut down travel from China early on in the virus episode because he said it was xenophobic and fear-mongering to do all those things. And then you have Hunter Biden traveling over to China with his dad when his dad was the vice president and coming home with a $1.5 billion investment in his firm. Now, what did the Chinese think that they were buying? Is it Hunter Biden's bubbly personality? Is it his unparalleled business acumen? What is it? What did they want from him? Or was it the fact that his dad was the vice president of the United States at the time? So yeah, you might hear a little bit about that.
And in this day and age, you have lots of video. I mean, you have the video of Joe Biden saying, "They're not our enemy, folks."
Even on the campaign trail, just in this election, he has very clearly said he does not view China as an economic threat. They're not going to eat our lunch. Come on, man, what, they're going to eat our lunch? Not only that, you know, everybody's been focused on this SpaceX launch, this big exciting thing. The mission got scrubbed yesterday, but they'll eventually blast off in Florida. Very important for a couple of reasons. One, it shows a partnership between the government and the private sector, that the government does not always have all the solutions to every problem. Second, this will be the first time in more than a decade where we don't have to rely on Russia for a ride to the space station. That's pretty important. And third, look back at what the United States has done with China. This is the president's clear message that the United States is not taking a backseat to China when it comes to the exploration of outer space. A clear message. Joe Biden, when he ran for president the last time in 2008, when asked about space exploration, he said that he wanted China to be a full partner in space exploration and not feel like a new entrant into it that always had to catch up to the United States. So he invited, come on, China, come sit in the front seat with us. And believe me, when President Trump talks about grabbing and maintaining a lead in space exploration, he is not going to take China along for the ride. And that's incredibly, that's exactly what Joe Biden said that he intended to do.
And that's good. It's simple stuff that anybody can understand too. You know, and that's what's good about the divide on China. But a couple more quick ones. Who do you think Joe Biden picks as a running mate? obviously.
No, I don't know. So there's so many of them. I think that they're, some of them are playing themselves out of contention right away. I think there was a little love affair there with Governor Whitmer, but she's kind of flamed out, and I don't want to handicap it. And frankly, it doesn't really matter to us. You know, right. I don't know if there's anybody who he could pick that could dress up the problems that Joe Biden himself brings. I mean, his record is so bad. He voted for NAFTA, and we know that he's going to run around and act like he is blue collar Joe from Scranton, PA. And but we'll be reminding people that he voted for NAFTA, which cost us hundreds of thousands of jobs. And he also has appointed AOC to head up one of his climate change panels inside his campaign. He's fully embraced the Green New Deal, and that means, you know, death to the energy industry. Up in New England, it'll drive heating and cooling bills, and we know as winter is going to be approaching us around as Election Day gets closer. We'll be reminding people that if Joe Biden had his way, you wouldn't be able to heat your house with natural gas or coal or oil. There's no question of that. Where does Joe Biden think that the electricity that people use, where does that come from? Most of it is generated by fossil fuels, and he would outlaw those under the Green New Deal. So I don't think there's a VP candidate who can help him out.
Yeah, although it is more important than ever, as you know, he doesn't appear like he's in it for the long haul. So people are going to look at his choice as a potential replacement within, you know, 6 months or a year. So it is.
Yeah, he has openly said maybe he'll only serve one term. I mean, I don't understand a feature? Does he think that's a selling point? I don't know.
But I think you guys should offer to pay AOC's way and Ilhan Omar's way. Ilhan Omar and AOC will pay your way on the campaign trail, first class flights, private charter, whatever. So yeah, you can go to Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Ohio and campaign with Joe Biden.
We would love that. We will do that. We will pay, I'm sure, all of her expenses and travel expenses. We'll make sure that the hotels are very nice and all that. Make sure she gets out on the campaign trail as often as possible.
Are you guys sorry to lose Ann Coulter?
Well, look, I mean, there's a lot of people in the media who try to carve out, different niches for themselves, and we can't be concerned about that.
She was kind of a big supporter in the campaign, and she is gone. Who's your favorite?
Look, the president is still solid on all the issues that I, as I understand them, that Ann Coulter cares about. Immigration, if you're looking at somebody who's going to be a champion to enforce immigration laws, does anyone doubt that Donald Trump is an absolute hardliner on immigration and enforcing our laws, enforcing the border, building the wall, making sure that he puts American citizens first instead of illegal aliens, people who have broken the law to come to this country? I mean, look at Joe Biden. He's going to offer them free health care. First of all, he's not going to deport anybody. In the first 100 days of his administration, he says he won't deport anyone. And then after 100 days, he'll deport only felons. So that's a huge, wide category of people who commit crimes who can stay in this country. There are a lot of bad crimes that people commit that don't rise to the level of felonies. And then if you do succeed in getting here, one, he's not going to kick you out. And two, he's going to give you free health care. And all that does is just put up a big flashing sign that says, you know, vacancy, come on into the United States, and free prizes when you get here.
That's true. And that's why you can't lose on those issues. Is I think Trump could have had more of the wall done by now. That's for sure. And Ann Coulter will remind us of that, you know, every day.
But hold on. Let's remember the battle that went on to try to get the wall built. I mean, these are Democrats who, over the course of their careers in Congress, all supported building a wall at one point or another. Suddenly, right, when Donald Trump becomes president, they don't want to build the wall anymore. He actually had to declare a national emergency and raise the funds that way to be able to fund the wall. And so he had to do a run around Congress because they obstructed him so much and use the authority that he's got to declare a situation of a national emergency to be able to have the funds to build the wall in the first place. So it's not as though Donald Trump has failed to succeed. In fact, he is succeeding despite all of establishment Washington trying to throw up roadblocks in his way. He should be championed for this. He should be applauded for this. He is accomplishing building the wall despite everyone's best efforts from stopping him in doing that. So I would think that, you know, Ann Coulter and others would look at this as a great success, that he was undeterred. By God, he's going to build the wall no matter who tries to stop him.
And you only get one, you know, you only get two choices. I mean, I'm a pragmatist when it comes to election day. You get two choices, and it's not even close. But
no, I don't think it's even close.
Who is your favorite It takes some balls to be a supporter of Donald J. Trump in Hollywood or be a celebrity. I mean, there's not, God knows, you can get blackballed pretty easily. I'm going to vote for James Woods. James Woods, John Voight, Scott Baio.
Yeah.
Who would you pick? That's not a lot.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to pick any one single ones, but you name some really good ones. James Woods, John Voight, I know is very close to the president. Ted Nugent just did a show the other day with Don Jr. So we appreciate his support. Jim Brewer, I don't know if you remember him from Saturday Night Live. He's doing another one of our online shows. And Scott Baio, you know, I mean, I grew up in, I'm afraid this is going to date me, but when I was a kid, Happy Days was the thing. You know, you had to watch Happy Days. And I feel like I've known who Scott Baio was my whole life. So that's a big one. You know, I think we have a lot of support. There's a lot of support in Hollywood and in entertainment. And I think people have seen the way that others have been treated. And so some of them are reluctant to speak up. But we know that the support is there. We're grateful for the ones who are brave enough to go out there. I think James Woods talks about, you know, he doesn't get any work anymore in Hollywood because of all of this. And so, you know, a guy like that who gives up, I'm sure, millions and millions of dollars in roles in different movies that he's now not getting because of his support of the president. We very much appreciate that. And people who put principle and their support of a president who stands up for America first and for good ideas and for things that are good for America and American citizens, somebody who decides that that's more important than getting roles in movies. I mean, I think that really shows a lot of character on behalf of all those folks.
One guy who is not really supporting him, I mean, he's not denouncing him, he's certainly not supporting Biden, but a former friend who's kind of a big deal where I am, where I, in what I do the last few years, Tom Brady, used to be a friend of Trump's. I mean, he was on my radio show joking about it, laughing about it. And then those forces that you know about, you know, they came after him, you know, the Boston Globe and, you know, certain groups, and he went silent. He said, I'm not talking about it anymore. And he hasn't really talked about it for a few years. But as far as you know, do they have kind of a quiet, under-the-radar relationship anymore or no?
I can't speak to that. I really don't know. I don't know who the president talks to, whether he talks to Tom Brady anymore or not. I mean, I know the history of the two, and they were friendly before, and I just don't have any information.
I can tell you what happened. Someone put Bob Kraft gave him a hat like you have right behind you there, gave him a Make America Great hat, put it in his locker, and people went nuts. Like, how can you do that? I mean, it was incredible. He stuck a hat in his locker, and people were ready to, you know, just string him up. It was not pretty. And I mean, I wasn't happy that Brady didn't stand up and say, yeah, we're friends, but he had too much on his plate and said, I don't want to deal with it. I'm not talking about it. And he didn't. And, yeah. You know, Bob Kraft, to his credit, still said, you know, he's a friend of mine. He's been a friend of mine and kind of stuck with him. He could have been a little more vocal about it, but it's funny because Kraft, Belichick, and Brady were all friendly with Trump. And that made the Patriots even more hated than they were before.
You know? Maybe. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, look at it. There's people in the media who have known Hillary Clinton, for goodness sake, used to take money from Donald Trump when he was a businessman. And they all sought his support, all kinds of Democrats, Chuck Schumer and others. They all sought his support when he was in the private sector, when he was businessman Donald Trump. And you just see it now that they just, it's like a switch has been flipped. And the media does it too. If President Trump says up, they have to say down. And if he agrees with a certain issue, they have to oppose it, like the wall. They all spent years and years and years supporting and voting for and funding border security and border barriers. And suddenly when Trump wants it, suddenly this is, oh, no, you can't do that. A wall is racist. Well, how can a wall be racist? I mean, that's ludicrous. And everyone knows that barriers work. All you have to do is talk to the border control about that. So people have, you know, it's the pressure of political correctness, I think. And a lot of these folks have just decided that it's better to buckle under than to face the Twitter mob.
You're right.
I don't know. I have no idea. Look at Tom Brady. He's been great. I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan. And so I My most recent memories of Tom Brady are in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago when the Eagles did beat the Patriots. But I have great admiration. He's been great on my fantasy teams, and you know, I don't have a bad. I really don't have a bad word to say about.
It's
Tom
hard Brady. To be, you know, be supporting Trump and face that mob. You've seen it. You've felt it. You know, it's you know James Woods and others have talked about it.
Yeah,
and Brady just feels like I have a job. I have a life. I can't.
Well, yeah, I mean, his job is to be a quarterback. He doesn't. Right. I'm not sure everybody thinks that it's everyone's job to be a political commentator. You know, Twitter wants everyone to take a stance, but you know, most Americans are happy to just go about their normal lives. In Tom Brady's case, his normal life is, you know, being just about the greatest quarterback who ever lived. That's his job.
Yeah, I wouldn't say just about. I'm pretty much stays there. Although, you know, you can always claim that you beat his ass. You and Nick Foles. You're an Eagles
fan. Nick Foles.
You're an Eagles fan, but you're also a Pittsburgh Pirates fan for good reason. Tim Murtaugh, your grandfather, was Danny Murtaugh, manager of the Pirates. So you grew up a Pirates fan. I assume you grew up a Danny Murtaugh fan. So let's see how much you know about Grandpa.
Are you going to ask me trivia questions?
We'll just do the basics then. How many? Okay. He played 9 years in the big leagues for the Boston Braves as well as the Pirates. How many home runs?
8.
Excellent. How many? You don't know RBI, do you?
No, I don't know how many RBIs. I know his lifetime batting average was 254.
Wow, you nailed it. Batting average 254, 8 home runs, 219 RBI. I'm assuming with such light hitting that he was a good fielder. I'm going to assume he had a good
fielder. He was an excellent fielder. He was also fast for that time. His rookie year of 1941, he came up with the Phillies. And even though he did not play a full season that year, in 1941, he led the National League in stolen bases. And it was with 18.
Correct.
Yes. That was a different era. 18 steals led the league.
He only played 85 games, but you want to know what else he led the league in?
What's that?
Caught stealing.
Well, he was an aggressive guy, you know. What are you gonna
say? But he won 2 World Series, correct?
That's right. He later became a manager and managed the Pirates. He retired 3 different times. So he actually managed the Pirates in 4 different stints. Counting up a total of about 15 seasons. And he won the World Series in 1960 over the New York Yankees, the heavily favored Yankees. You know, it was the Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, Whitey Ford, Yogi Berra, Casey Stengel Yankees, and beat them in 7 games. Famous Bill Mazeroski home run in the bottom of the 9th inning of Game 7. Still the only World Series to end on a home run in the bottom of the 9th of Game 7. And so that was 1960. And then 1971, they won again. Roberto Clemente was the star of both those World Series. Clemente had a hit in all 14 World Series games that he played in, by the way. In 1971, they were against the Baltimore Orioles. The Orioles at that time, and still are, the only team to have 4 20-game winners on their pitching staff, which is incredible. 4 pitchers won 20 games for the Orioles that year. They were heavy, heavy favorites. The Baltimore Sun actually predicted that the Orioles would win the World Series in 3 games. Which, as you know, is not possible. And again, that one went to 7 games. Steve Blass was a big hero. 2 complete game shutouts in that World Series. Clemente had a home run in Game 7. Willie Stargell, he had some great teams.
How old were you that year? Like, you have clear memories of it?
In 71, I was 2 years old.
So no.
I know that I was at the games, but I don't remember them, no.
Did you ever get to play catch with Clemente or Stargell?
With Willie, and I never played catch with Willie, but we certainly knew him. I went, you know, we were around and still are around the Pirates quite a bit. We go to games and go to the reunions and things as our family. But Clemente, I don't have any memories of. I have a picture of myself with Clemente when I was very young because, you know, he died in 1972 in that plane crash. But Willie, we knew very well and went up to Cooperstown to see him inducted into the Hall of Fame. I think it was 87. I think if memory serves, when he was inducted in the Hall of Fame and we were guests and what a great thrill. And Will, I can remember my father walking up to Willie during a reception at the Cooperstown Inn the night before the inauguration ceremonies. And there was a giant crowd of people. Willie was the only one that year who was being inducted, so he was really the center of attention. And my dad waited until there was an opportunity, and he said, "Hey, Willie, it's good to see you again. Tim Murtaugh," my dad has the same name as I do. And Willie put his hand on my father's shoulder and said, "Tim, you don't have to introduce yourself to me. I remember you coming to the ballpark and taking batting practice, and here's Timmy. He was running around talking about me." So Willie was always just a really very gracious man. He died too young as well, like Clemente, different means, of course. But Willie, what a great guy. And we still see Mazeroski at the reunions, and Steve Blass and Bill Verdon, and a lot of the old names there. There are fewer and fewer of them every time these reunions roll around, which is very sad, because these two World Series are fading off into the distance pretty rapidly. They were a long time ago.
But you still root for the you're not a Steelers fan. You're an Eagles and a Pirates fan.
Yeah, I grew up on the Philadelphia side of the state. So I'm a Philadelphia sports fan for everything but baseball. You know, when Grandpa was running a baseball team, you sort of had to be a fan of that team. And I remain a Pirates fan today, and it's a tough job.
I would think you'd expect, like, when you were that kid, did you think you were going to play in the big leagues? Did you just assume that you
Well, it was a dream, sure. I absolutely wanted to. But unfortunately, the baseball talent level seems to get watered down by generation in my family. Grandpa played 9 years, would have played more. He missed 2 years for World War II. Played 9 years at second base in the big leagues and then managed for all those years. My father went to the College of the Holy Cross there in Worcester and was an All-American catcher in college and first-round draft pick and went on and played all the way, made it all the way up to AAA as a catcher. And then I myself wasn't quite good enough to play Division I college baseball. So it keeps getting gradually lower and lower. My own two boys, who are very little right now, if that trend continues, they have no chance.
No. Well, it sounds like, like I said, this is the new sporting event. We got no sports right now, but we have Trump versus Biden and McElhaney versus the media. And that, yeah, you know, that fuels those competitive juices. And I know you got a long.
It's a team sport. Politics is a team sport. There's no question. I should point out, these are the 1960 Pirates behind me here.
Are they?
Yeah. That's the team photo of your 1960 world champion Pittsburgh Pirates. I still have, in another part of this room that you can't see, I have the jersey that my grandfather was wearing when Mazeroski hit the home run, the one that he had on at that moment. We also have his World Series rings in the family, and it's great.
Well, you know that Bob Kraft just sold one Super Bowl ring. In fact, it was the game against the Eagles. He sold that Super Bowl ring for $1 million.
Well,
so I don't think
ours are worth that much. They were different then. They weren't these big honking softball-sized rings that they have now.
Actually, he lost that Super Bowl. I think it had to be the Falcons game. It had to be one that he won the, yeah, the 28-3, the comeback game where there's
That was incredible.
That's 283 diamonds in it because they came back from 28-3.
And 28-3. How about that?
Pissed off all the Falcons fans, and it pissed off the Falcons owner too, Arthur Blank. He thought that he was rubbing his nose in it. But anyway, Tim Murtaugh.
Maybe he was.
Director of Communications for the Trump campaign. Thanks for the time, Tim. Hopefully we can talk to you again down the road, but good luck with everything. It's going to be a wild next 6 months.
Yeah, it's going to be a wild ride. And we know how it ends, though. It ends with President Trump's reelection. So I appreciate your time, Jerry. It was a lot of fun. Good conversation.
I appreciate it, Tim. Thank you. That's Tim Murtaugh, Director of Communications for the Trump campaign. And guy who's got his hands full, and that's a pretty cool job, if you ask me. I think it's one of those jobs where you wake up in the morning, you're just fired up to get out there and do battle. That's what it feels like. It feels like a sport. It feels like he's out there playing a sport every day, and he's got. I think he's the odds-on favorite right now, not because of anything Trump's doing, because God knows the economy's in trouble and the virus hasn't gone away, and a lot of the blue states are tanking intentionally. But God, he's got doesn't have much of an opponent right now. Does not have much of an opponent. If I were waking up every day saying how are we going to beat Joe Biden, I think I'd have a little bounce in my step too. But I think he didn't say it, but I think he kind of agrees with me that Donald J. Trump on Twitter can get a little cringy. all in all, they probably like the fact that he's tireless and he's competitive and he's a counterpuncher and he's ready to do battle. And the other guy is hiding Biden, still in his basement, all masked up and stammering and stuttering his way through the campaign. But it's just begun. 6 months we got. Is that what it is? July, June, July, August, September, up to 6 months from a couple days from now is going to be the election. I don't think Charlie Baker and Andrew Cuomo and Phil Murphy can hang on for six more months. I think they're going to have to open up. They would like to. They would like to hang on and tank for six more months, but it's going to have to open up and see what happens. And if the economy takes off like a rocket, like Trump is predicting, then he's in, man, he's in. And if it doesn't, if the virus spikes again, as so many on the left are hoping, then we got a contest battle, and we'll see who Trump, we'll see who Biden picks as a VP, because nobody thinks he's going to be able to last 4 years, let alone eight. So that will be interesting too. And hopefully we'll have at least three debates in person, and hopefully there'll be a lot of fun. But that's Tim Murtaugh, Director of Communications, on this bonus edition of the Callahan Podcast. I'm Jerry Callahan. We will talk to you again soon.
Why am I stopping? No one else stops.
I don't. Can I go home?
The Jerry Callahan Podcast.